主の彼方に光る星、青い地球は。
Hello, friends, and welcome to Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr.And broadcasting today on BBS Station 1 out of Lafayette, California in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I'm so happy everyone's here. I have a very special guest from my first hour, Kevin Annette, who's he's been nominated twice for the Nobel Peace Prize. He's been fighting for the rights of children and against child abuse and sex trafficking for many decades. And I'm so happy he's on my show. We'll be going to his interview in just a minute. The second hour will be followed by...some wonderful new homeschooling kits made up by the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, Japan. I know a lot of kids are home now. Some schools aren't meeting. But for parents wondering what to do with their kids, if you like to do homeschooling or if you'd like to do a fun project for your children, you can get one of these. You can get one of these kits and.Just got a message. If we could check our video connections, they're not seeing the video on Facebook. So if somebody could check that, that'd be great. Anyway, great. Thank you so much, my friends, for putting it up. Thanks so much. I'm continuing. Today's a very special day. It's 8/8/2020. And that it's called a Lion's Gate today, where spiritual energies are coming from the higher dimensions into this dimension.And so it's a very auspicious day to do some prayers for humanity. As you know, I've been in contact with 6 different U.S. presidents. That's one of the reasons why I have Kevin Annette on today, because he does wonderful work, and they're very concerned about the future of future of the planet. If we could check our Zoom connections, apparently several people can't see me on Zoom, but I know we can get it fixed. George Washington said, I want to read some messages from the 6 presidents before we start. He said, we have to continue to send love to all the captive people and those in need on the planet. Abraham Lincoln has told me, he wanted to share this with you. This is a special time. The energy coming into the planet, positive energy, is massive.And it'll help others with this ascension. We are on track for shifting into the fifth dimension. And Adama, the high priest of Telos beneath Mount Shasta, says we need to feel the God within all of us and have that love energy go to everyone. What President Kennedy has told me repeatedly is not to leave. Great. Thank you so much for checking that. Is not to leave anyone behind. So.We have a beautiful, bright future ahead of us. There's going to be challenges, but it's not to say that there are negative elements that who aren't going to fight back. I'll give you an example of that. Yesterday, I started my first show on WWNN in Miami, Florida. It's a wonderful station. I really appreciate all their help and support. And I had Robert F. Kennedy as my first speaker, first interview yesterday. And as soon as we started, all the audio was cut off. I didn't even know I was on the air.It took about, so finally, Mr. Kennedy, I wasn't able to interview Mr. Kennedy, but fortunately I had a backup. Michiko Hayashi from the wonderful Emoto Peace Project was on the show, and I woke her up and got her out of bed with her pajamas on, and she helped me do the show. But it was funny because after Mr. Kennedy left, all the audio worked fine, no problem. So obviously there are forces out there that didn't want him on my show, but I'll be having Mr. Kennedy on.Again, sometime in the near future. I'm looking for notes. These are the notes I've gotten from all the presidents. And just know that this is a time, of course, change. And we're all helping to build a much brighter and better future. Real brief, before I start my interview with Kevin, I'm continuing to collect money for and food for the Hopi. Many Hopi Indians on the reservation in Arizona are not getting their food supplies.And so I'm going to be bringing a load of food down to the Hopi here in about a week's time. And if you'd like to donate any food, or if you'd like to donate some funds to buy food for the Hopi, just send me an email, please, to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I also wanted to tell everyone on my book, I've sent a whole bunch of books out. I'm sending more books out today, so please be patient. Everyone who ordered a book will be getting them very, very soon. They're all being sent out. If you'd like a copy of my book, Messages from the Masters, it's a book on messages from Abraham Lincoln, Benjamin Franklin, John F. Kennedy, Nostradamus, Albert Einstein, and other great masters on our beautiful, bright future. The book's just $20. Includes a free reading by myself. And just send me an email if you'd like a copy of the book. It's Out of This World, 1150@gmail.com. The other thing too I'd like to start, before we start is to play this 528 tuning fork. The frequency of love is 528. Here's the tuning fork here. And when I hit it with a crystal from Mount Shasta, Lemurian crystal, it sends love everywhere. I'm gonna do that now. This is the frequency of love. And it's a nice way to start the day to have one of these. I usually play one every day and send lots of love and light around me. Isn't that nice? If you like one, just send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. They're just $50. And lastly, before I forget, I have I'm in touch with the Hiroshima Peace Committee in Japan. They have a special ceremony to commemorate the victims of the atomic bomb attack on Japan back in 45. And I have these beautiful little sticks for the Hiroshima ceremony. If you'd like one, they're just $6. So just let me know if you'd like one. And with that, I'd like to bring on Kevin. I think I've talked enough. Kevin, hi. It's so good to have you here today. Thank you so much for coming on my show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Ted. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great, great. By the way, I want to tell everyone, every Saturday at 11 a.m., I will be sending peace and prayers of peace and freedom for the entire world, including the victims of sex trafficking. And I'd like to have everyone join me every Saturday at 11 a.m. that specific time. And if you can, just spend a minute during your busy day, stop for a moment, send lots of love and light to all over the planet for peace and freedom for all of us, and especially for those victims of sex trafficking and pedophilia, which they desperately need our help. So with that, Kevin, thank you so much for coming on today. How did you get interested? How did you start your work? Was there one event in your life that triggered you into this kind of activism, or what motivated you?
Well, I've always been someone who's not able to look the other way. You know, the kid in the schoolyard who's getting picked on by the bully, always there with him, right? Early on in my late 20s, I decided to go into the ministry. And I finally got ordained in the United Church as a clergyman when I was 32 and in 1990. So what happened was quite interesting, because after a few postings back east, I accepted a job in Port Alberni, which is on the west coast of Canada. It's like a lumber mill town.
Sure.
On Vancouver Island. And talking about an incident, the very first thing I noticed about the church is that it was a dying congregation, but there were no natives anywhere, because even though a third of the local population was Aboriginal. So I began asking around. Of course, the white people didn't want to talk about it. There was kind of like a big family secret nobody wanted to discuss. And the first native home I went into, I heard the story. A man called Danny Gus, he was a retired native fisherman, and he said he had seen his best friend murdered in the local residential school in Port Alberni, which was run by the very church I was working for. So, you know, it was kind of an eye-opener, because I kept hearing the same stories from all sorts of Native people. And eventually I brought that out. I began to open the pulpit to people like that with stories. And I think I survived for the 2.5 years I was there as long as I did, because I was growing the congregation. People were very pleased with the fact that, you know, that I was helping turn their church around and everything. But what eventually happened was we found out that the United Church, and there'd been a long history of this, their missionaries, after having grabbed the land, the native land, and wiped out about 3/4 of the natives with smallpox and other means, they sold off this land to local logging companies. And none of the money, of course, ever went back to the natives, which violated the very church policy, which said that, you know, we've got to do justice to the people we've harmed. So I just quoted that policy, and I was out on my can within very quickly. I was fired with an order from the head office. They approached my wife and said, if you want to leave this guy, we'll pay for your divorce. It was an amazing kind of shutdown campaign that started on me that still carries on to today, because it was the genocide that I began to uncover, which even Canada eventually had to admit in their 2008 apology. And even recently, last year, Prime Minister Trudeau admitted that it was genocide, and yet nobody's ever been prosecuted for it. It was that whole can of worms that began to open up. And for me, it was a rapid education. And it was reflected in the lives of the people I was dealing with. It wasn't an abstract issue. The suicide rate, you know, the child abuse going on, everything was right through the roof. And it was coming from a whole history and an ongoing reality that most people didn't even want to acknowledge, and they still don't want to acknowledge. So that for me is kind of like the time frame. That was more than 25 years ago now.
Well, amazing, amazing. And so you started your investigation. Did you continue working as a reverend after that? What happened?
Well, when I got fired after 2.5 years there, I was given an ultimatum. I was told that if I wanted to keep my job in ministry, and I had 2 children by then, they were 6 and 3 years old, my daughters, so I had a family to support. They basically said that to keep my job, I had to agree to psychiatric evaluation and a year's training without pay, which was absurd. They also said there was no basis to claim a psych evaluation, but they were doing it anyway because they had to find a quick way to get rid of me from my position. And so I was put on ice. I couldn't get a job anywhere else in the church. I was eventually defrocked. It was the only public defrocking of a minister in United Church history. Like, it was a show trial very much. Wow. To make an example of me, because right at the very same time that was happening, the first law were beginning in Canada about these Indian residential schools. Eventually, thousands of lawsuits brought against the Catholic, Anglican, United Churches. And their partner in crime, the Canadian government, protected them all along. But the point is, all of this was coming out. The church went into damage control mode. They panicked and they wanted to just bury me as quickly as possible, which is what you do to whistleblowers. You know, you destroy their family, you destroy their means of income, you hope they'll just dry up and blow away. But I didn't. As a matter of fact, it activated me even more because I had less and less to lose. I lost my children, my livelihood, and I began to work with the Native people all over Vancouver, all the eyewitnesses to these horrible crimes of genocide. We eventually documented. It's all online at murderbydecree.com. You can see the whole history, all the evidence there. And, you know, what happened was what you expect in a regime that did genocide. The whole thing's been effectively concealed. The eyewitnesses paid off or killed off. And, you know, people in this generation, it's very odd. They don't even know any of the stuff that we spent so many years to bring out publicly. And a lot of the memory of that's been buried. So that's why it's very important to keep the memory alive on shows like yours about how these things, if you allow it to happen to one group, it'll happen to all of us. And the whole thing happening now with the talk of mandatory vaccination. They've been having mandatory vaccinations against Indians on this continent for over a century and a half. You cannot, under the Indian Act in Canada, you can't refuse medical treatment or you go to jail. You can't refuse a vaccine being put in your child's arm or you go to jail, because they're not citizens. They're wards of the state under the law. So you see, it was like experimentation on the Indians. That happened very easily, and so now they're doing it to all of us. And I mean, it's a real lesson there for everyone, I think.
There's a rumor going around here in the United States, Kevin, that I should tell you about, that for the last 5 years, the pharmaceutical companies here in the United States have been giving out free flu shots to people. And in those flu shots are nanobots, the microchips that Bill Gates wants to put into people now, but they've already been doing it. About 60%, I've been told, of the vaccines already done. So these poor Indians, so they're all vaccinated. Is that right? Is that what you're saying, that on the Native
Reserve? Well, I mean, yeah, as early as the 1960s, they were using Natives experimentally, and not just Natives. These were soldiers, prisoners, children in care homes, anybody, any captive population. They've been experimenting on for a long time with this stuff. Wow. But, you know, in a way, I often say to people, there's no real need to control the minds of everybody because the vast majority of people already conform. They already tend to go along with things and not question things. I think it's, I'm not saying that agenda isn't there, but it tends to be focused, the attacks, on targeted people and targeted groups, not the whole general population, which are pretty much already in the harness. But, you know, and of course it's big money, right? I mean, it's big pharma. As a matter of fact, I learned the other day that Google, which people look to as, you know, an information source, is actually owned by GlaxoSmithKline, GSK, which is one of the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world. Wow. And, you know, they've been behind all the bioengineering, the microchips, all of that stuff, the military use of it. I mean, so, you know, the information, everything on the internet is very controlled by these very forces that are bringing in global genocide, right?
I get this question all the time, Kevin, but what can the average person do to help turn things around if they know there's, for example, abuse in a church or a governance agency, and people don't listen to them? What do you recommend people do, Peter?
Speak out immediately as publicly and loudly as possible, because the first thing that does is saves lives. You know, these people are cowards. Having gone up against them for many years, I realize, you know, people in authority create an image of power when in fact they don't have it. We found that when we began occupying churches around the whole issue of genocide, they buckled immediately. They started getting the government to move in, cover up the crimes, because they knew they were wrong. They knew they were guilty. They knew the evidence was out there. The problem is we're asking people to do something that doesn't come naturally, because we're all raised to defer to authority, even if it's got blood on its hands.
Sure.
And it's very hard. The first thing a person thinks when they learn a child is being harmed is not so much how can I protect that child, but what's going to happen to me if I start talking about this, like in a job or whatever. And we have to overcome that. There's only, I find that there's only a minority of people usually who are able to speak out. And we have to encourage those people and give them support. I do a lot of that work all the time with people. But the first important thing is to make it public immediately. Name the names, you know, raise a stink, pick at their homes, let them know that we are watching them. And that's the way you, first of all, protect children's lives, because unfortunately the police, the courts, the government are actively colluding in a huge child trafficking industry. Give you an example of that. The Catholic Church since 1929 has had an official policy called Crimen Solicitanus. And it says that when a children is raped in the Catholic Church, no one is to be told. They're to be silenced. The police are not to be told. And that fact alone makes it a criminal conspiracy under the law to protect child rapists. So every Catholic's expected to do that, or they'll be excommunicated. You know, like, excommunicated for protecting child. And that's the reign of kind of brainwashing and collusion that goes on. And that's just one example. They figure most of the child trafficking occurs within the existing system of child protection, so-called child protection, and in care homes, orphanages, like foster homes, children are rampantly trafficked through that system. So it operates right in the very system. It's not a bunch of kooks on their own operating without sanction. They've got a lot of backing for this thing. It's big money, right?
Well, you mentioned big money. And I mean, I think everyone has a moral compass and they're able to tell what's right and what's wrong. And I guess I can't understand why anyone would ever engage in that kind of criminal behavior. It's totally against. And you say big money. I mean, do they sell children to make money off of it?
To give you an example from Vancouver, Canada, there's a thing called, and this is probably in many of the hospitals across North America, but we uncovered this through eyewitnesses. There's a thing called Baby for Adoption Protocol, BFA. And the Catholic Church identifies young girls, you know, who are pregnant out of wedlock. And they're immediately brought to special homes where they're put through a regime of brainwashing, where they're told that you're not going to be able to raise your child properly, give it to the church. And so literally they start giving them drugs like OxyContin, lactation suppressants, things that are going to just mess them up and make them think that they can't be good mothers. When the child is born, and they have the collusion of doctors, social workers, and everything in this, when the child's born, it's immediately taken away. The mother can't even hold her own baby, newborn. And it's immediately trafficked because the local adoption agencies gives to the church a quota of the number of babies they need every year. And so it's a huge baby trafficking industry.
Wow.
And that child is, you know, not just for, you know, parents who want children, but for all sorts of other purposes, you know, which are very criminal and nefarious. So, I mean, it's an integrated system. And like I say, it makes, we found in one example, the present Pope, Jorge Bergoglio, Pope Francis, you know, he's created this image of being very progressive and nice guy. He was a spin doctor who replaced the last guy who looked like the evil emperor, and who had been actually criminally convicted, but we can get into that. The present Pope became very prominent in the Catholic Church in Argentina by trafficking children for political prisoners being held by the military junta there during the dirty wars in the late 70s, early 80s.
Right.
And the Catholic Church does that all over the world. They traffic children in a huge network, makes them, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. And it's so integrated that, you know, these churches, they have legal, political protection. They can do it. It's the best way to do it rather than being, you know, operating on your own and just, you know.
Sure. I want to make this point, and I'm sure you would agree, Kevin, that, you know, they're not all bad. I was raised Catholic myself. And I had no idea anything like this was happening until I woke up later and started learning about it. And I'm just so saddened about that. I told you this earlier. I was approached by six U.S. presidents here during the last couple of months, and they wanted me to help bring this out this year because these kids need help. And this child trafficking and the pedophilia must stop. They were adamant about it. It's ruining society. Right. And we don't have who in their right mind would whatever want to perpetuate such a system.
Well, I mean, I'll give you an example. When you're caught in a corporate network, no one thinks they're responsible, but they're all making it happen.
Mm-hmm.
You go to church. Yeah. You say there's good people in church. Yeah, sure there are. But the point is they're part of something that's collectively very evil. Mm-hmm. And every time they put money in a collection plate and go to church and legitimate it, they're under the law. They're an accessory to a crime. And don't forget, mm-hmm. under the law, you don't have to pull the trigger on a murder weapon. All you have to do is hide it, and you're just as guilty under the law. Well, so is anyone, and especially there's been international court cases that have said, not just the Catholic Church, but any church that does these crimes, like the Anglican and United Churches in Canada that wiped out over 60,000 Native children in these residential schools I talked about. Anyone who contributes to that church, you're colluding in you're aiding and abetting a criminal conspiracy, and normally they'd be held accountable for that, but because it's such a big institution with billions of dollars, they can evade justice all the time. They can buy whatever justice they want. So it's a responsibility of everyone in those churches to step back, and I've done this with people, say, look, just don't put money in the collection plate. Say I want to keep the money locally, I don't want to give it to Rome, which uses a lot of that money. You know, the Vatican Bank is one of the heaviest investors in the arms industry and big pharma. You know, I mean, and so we have to withdraw from these corporate structures that compromise our beliefs and help us be accessories to a crime. I think that's the main point, morally and legally, right?
Well, one of the things I've heard persistent rumors down here about, and I'm sure you could give us some more details about this, Kevin, is a case in the early 1960s involving 8 to 10 Native American children from a school in British Columbia, who visited Queen Elizabeth and they disappeared, never to return. Do you know much about that case? We don't get anything in the media down here about it.
Well, that's what I mean about the memory of this being wiped out, because that's the case we brought out. One of the men who brought it forward was working on a network in Vancouver. His name was William Coombs. And October 10th, 1964, he was a young boy at this Catholic school, Kamloops Residential School in central British Columbia. He saw Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip take these 10 children away, and they were never seen again. Now, we checked the statistics. They were there. Philip and Elizabeth were in Canada at that time. These children were never seen again. William was actually summoned to an international inquiry in London, and 2 days before he was to come, he died. In St. Paul's Catholic Hospital in Vancouver, Chloe Kirker, the nurse who treated him, said he didn't die of TB like they claimed. He had all the evidence of arsenic poisoning, including blackened fingernails and all the symptoms of it. So when you're a Native person, you can be killed like that easily all the time. That's the only reason I'm still alive, because I'm white and had a lot of public exposure on this stuff.
Sure.
We had seven people like William die in our network in Canada, bringing out these kinds of stories. So it's easy to cover up these crimes, but they're so common. And again, that whole incident with the Queen and everything, it's all in my book, murderbydecree.com.
Okay.
We summoned her and others to the first common law court case in Brussels. They ignored the summons, which is an admission of guilt under the law,
sure,
not to defend your good name. They're criminally convicted individuals, and yet it's hard for people to understand that, because we're conditioned to think that people in authority are somehow virtuous, have our best interests at heart, right? And that's, of course, quite the opposite.
I remember Princess Diana used to call the royalty lizard people. Have you heard that in Britain?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in a way, it's letting them off the hook, because I think people can do this without being lizards. I think human beings do this to each other all the time. And yeah, we have to hold them accountable for that, right? I mean, the things I've seen as a minister would blow your mind. Maybe it wouldn't blow your mind, but what human beings are capable of with each other, especially when there's money and power involved, you know?
Wow. The whole thing with adrenochrome too is a really bothering issue that's bothering the six U.S. presidents I've been in contact with. I've been in contact with President George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Dwight D. Eisenhower, John F. Kennedy, John Quincy Adams, Abraham Lincoln, and they're all extremely concerned about this pedophilia and the sex trafficking. They're extremely proud of your work, Kevin, for exposing it. The message I keep getting from the other side — I'm a psychic, I've been in touch with the other side for the past 25, 26 years — is that there will be disclosure of the people involved, including very many politicians who now are household names. I'm not going to name names, but they said that there are many, many politicians involved in this sex trafficking, and it will come out. The truth — this is a time of truth, and that it will be exposed. So,
well, I mean, yeah, it's the evidence has been out there for many years, and the eyewitnesses, right, the ones that are still living, have been talking about this for many years. One of the reasons this has reached a critical mass and is known all over the world is because of the work we've done. And especially, it really hit the people's attention in 2013 when we convened a common law court in Brussels and actually convicted — I call them the Dirty 30. There are 30 defendants, including Queen Elizabeth, Pope Benedict, Prime Minister, other officials of church and state. And their evidence was incontrovertible that they not only committed these crimes, but then concealed it. And, you know, the point is, it has a delayed ripple effect when you do something. It doesn't matter how small you are. When you do something, it spreads through the consciousness. And now everyone is talking about this stuff. I mean, back then, I was the only one ever using the word genocide to describe these things in Canada. Now even the Prime Minister uses the word. Because if you persist with the truth, it has a power all of its own. And so that's why we have to encourage people. You may feel alone and you don't have any power, but the more you speak out, the more you create that moral and psychic ripple that starts to change the consciousness and eventually forces change, right?
There are, of course, this is an election year in the United States. And I don't want you to name names, Kevin. But I've been told by my spirit friends on the other side that there are many prominent politicians involved in this pedophilia and sex trafficking, and people would be shocked to know of their identities. Have you heard the same thing?
Well, you know, yes, but it's broader than that, in that when it's a system in place, it's not a matter of just individuals, because of course, what the system does when it starts getting exposed is focuses on individuals. They say, yeah, it was this person who's the problem. The system isn't the problem. It's just these bad individuals, right? And the reality is that they swim in a whole culture where this is acceptable. The death, the murder and trafficking of children is not a crime and never has been in our culture. It's actually genocide, and the death of children is a tool of state and church. It always has been. It's how you keep your people in line, by terrorizing them at a young age. You traumatize them. And so it's not like all parties, all politicians, even if they don't partake personally, they know about it. And you don't survive in a system like this unless you know about it, and are to some degree complicit, either by commission or omission, right? So I don't, in that sense, I don't point fingers at individuals. Frankly, the whole lot of them are guilty. you know,
okay.
And we have to change our thinking in terms of how are we complicit. That I don't even worry about the people in authority. I say, the question is you and me and our neighborhood and the people in our immediate circle. How do we change? Because we've shown that if you create that grassroots momentum, it changes everything, right?
Sure.
And that's what I focus on every day, getting people's attention back to what we can do in our own situation, right?
Sure, absolutely. I wanted to ask you, Kevin, what do you know what's going on here in the United States? Our media is controlled down here. We don't get a lot of information, but I was wondering if anything you heard down here, especially since the election year.
Well, America is, of course, very involved in all of this stuff, but it's interesting because America tends to be, on this stuff, more open than Canada. Canada's a completely closed society run from what they call crown authority. But I put it in the bigger context of what's going on in the world geopolitically. China is rising power. It's rapidly America between different forces fighting each other. And China, we found this evidence years ago. China's been buying up all of the resources all over the country. They own a third of the U.S. debt. I believe this whole shutdown is a way to crash the economy so China can pick up the debt and control everything. We know for a fact that there's Chinese death squads operating in northern Canada. There's been a lot of disappearances. The Canadian government was even compelled to do an official inquiry, which is really just a cover-up, into the missing Native women all over the place. Well, its whole family's going missing, and eyewitnesses have described how they've seen Chinese soldiers, RCMP officers, and others just terrorizing people off their land. The first Native women whose bodies started appearing, I've read some of the police reports about it provided by a insider sympathetic RCMP officer, and they described how these women were missing organs. Well, the very general involved in organ trafficking in China in the prisons sits on the board of directors of the liquid natural gas company PetroChina, that's buying up all these sites all over northern British Columbia. And if you trace where a lot of the Native families go missing, it's right along these liquid natural gas sites. You know, it's the same old thing. The British did it. The British, any empire does this. They have to terrorize people off their land, you know, and that's what's going on, genocide now. And that's not just in Canada. The whole Pacific coast, really, is targeted. I mean, why wouldn't it all be surprised if China, you had outright warfare between China and America and Canada, because very soon, Trudeau, the first thing Prime Minister Trudeau did when he was elected a few years ago was he removed all restrictions on Chinese investment in Canada.
Really?
And then he brought in a thing called the Foreign Investment Protection. Yep. The Foreign Investment Protection Act, which was passed by Trudeau, allows China to station their troops on Canadian soil to protect their investments. I mean, that's an open, it's an act of treason, yet we're being turned into a colony, absolutely. And so, you know, with that green light to invasion, I mean, anything can happen. And I think I put everything in that context of what I've learned on the ground and really the big forces behind this, right? Like America's declining in the world, China's the rising power, and Russia's trying to kind of play off both, right? I mean, it's this big chess game going on. And, you know, so I put things in that bigger context. And, you know, who knows what is playing what side? I mean, politics is the most confusing game on the planet, right? But I think I put it in that context.
Two things I wanted to mention to you, Kevin, is that I've heard credible sources talk about how the Trudeau, Prime Minister Trudeau, recently gave a contract to the Chinese to devise security systems for Canadian embassies around the world. This is leading concern.
That's right.
This is leading to a serious concern among the United States, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, the Five Eyes intelligence community, that the Canadian intelligence, of course, will be compromised as a result of that. We won't be able to deal with Canada anymore as a reliable a country as far as sharing information. I don't know if you've heard about that, but I have heard those concerns.
Well, absolutely. And that's why, you know, like the Canadian government right now is actively colluding with China. An example of that, the head of, there's a thing called the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, CSIS, and it's the equivalent of, it's like Canada's CIA. They like to call themselves that at least, but
sure.
The head of it, 10 years ago, the head of CSIS, the CSIS director, Richard Fadden, said publicly to the media that the Chinese government has been systematically infiltrating the British Columbia government, that's the west coast of Canada, especially sure. in the resource sectors, the Ministry of Forestry, Mines, Resources. And very soon after that, he was forced to step down. So, I mean, go figure, right? I mean, even at the official level, they're acknowledging that takeover has been happening for a long time, right?
Interesting. Yeah. I've heard rumors as well that Prime Minister Trudeau actually wears an ankle bracelet. Have you heard of that?
I've heard the rumor. I don't know. I mean, I guess for me, it's a question of the hard evidence. And you also have to be careful about rumors because they're often put out to distract and decoy.
That's
away
true.
From yeah. the main issue. And, yeah. and right. you know, so I say, well, let's look at the evidence. Right.
I'm a psychic, Kevin, and I've been in touch with the other side for about 25, 26 years. So my sources of information are sometimes a little different than mainstream. And one of the things that that the Andromeda, well, Alex Collier is a friend of mine. He's in contact with the Andromeda Galaxy. And there are humans on the Andromeda Galaxy. It's the closest galaxy to this Milky Way galaxy. And the Andromedans have told Alex that in all human civilizations outside of planet Earth, those who've allowed abortion and sex trafficking like we've allowed here have only lasted an average of 125 years because they tended to value life and eventually they end up killing each other in a war. So I wanted to throw that out to you and I'm so glad for your work in exposing all of this.
Thank you. Well, I think we all know at a gut level that's true. You know that the moral consequence or spiritual consequence of living alongside these crimes, knowing they're happening and not doing anything, we're the one who pay the price for that, right?
Right.
And you reach a level where any sense of morality is so low now it's non-existent. And people, I found this giving talks. You know, I'll describe what I know and the evidence, and it doesn't seem to bother people. There's kind of a numbness that's set in with people. You've got to describe something really horrendous for them to be shocked by it.
Right.
And I think that's indicates the numbing that's going on every level. And that's a response, you know, when you're being beaten up, which we are just living here, we're just constantly assaulted with this horrible evidence and the fear now that's so rampant. The response to that is to withdraw into yourself and not be open, not be empathic, but we can't lose our humanity. And this is kind of one of the lessons I learned. You know, I was asked by a minister to close a food bank, to throw the Indians out of the church. If I had done that, I could have kept my job, but I wouldn't be able to live with myself.
Right.
And it's a simple moral issue for me. It always has been, even though it cost me my family, my children. You know, sure. I'm still under a blacklist 25 years later. You don't ever get out from under something like that. But I have the satisfaction knowing I did the right thing. And I think that that's something that people are afraid to act on because they're afraid of losing the things that we equate with life, right? But, you know, home, security, whatever. The point is I've lost all of that and I'm still here and I feel I'm better and stronger now for it. So people have got to go through that fire of fear and they realize, well, you know, that was an illusion. And we have to hold on to what's essential in ourselves and around us, starting with the lives of children. And if we can't defend them, what does anything matter? We don't have a future, right?
Well, that's true. About 2 months ago, I wanted to share with this with you, Kevin, in this context. There was a video done by some tourists at Buckingham Palace in London. They're watching the changing of the guard, and a tourist was doing a video of the changing of the guard. And in the background, there was a young boy about 8-9 years old escaping from a second or third story floor of the palace with a series of bed sheets. And he was completely nude. He jumped down and then ran off. Have you heard about that video? And people were asking, how did this happen?
Well, I have. And again, that's back in 2010 when I was last in England. I was deported from England without cause in 2011, actually. I was about to speak at a rally in Trafalgar Square about high level child trafficking involving the royal family and the government. And I was just boom. Trying to get into the country, they wouldn't let me, and they held me in an immigration prison and then deported me. But at that time, around 2010, we had surfaced a number of eyewitnesses who were there. I spoke to, there was a young girl who had actually been held in prison beneath Buckingham, but there's a lot of less obvious places. Carnarvon Castle. There was, if you look at our murderbydecree.com site, you'll see two eyewitnesses, two Dutch women who describe being part of what's called the Ninth Circle, which is an old child sacrificial network in the Catholic Church involving the royal families of Europe, going back centuries to at least the 1700s. Mm-hmm. It's called the Ninth Circle because there are nine circles of hell in Dante's Inferno. And it refers to the lowest level of hell where Satan resides. And it's believed that the sacrificial murder and cannibalizing of children gives them power.
Wow.
And these rituals, we've mapped where they go on. All the popes and top cardinals are expected to take part. We've had eyewitnesses describe seeing them there. We've had Vatican Library documents referring to the Ninth Circle. I mean, it's pretty conclusive, and yet the media tends to focus on these sensational stories, you know. Sure. Again, the bad individual queen that happened at Buckingham Palace, but it's more widespread and more thorough and less obvious than that. It occurs regularly all over the place, right? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of things on the planet right now which I think will help the situation, Kevin. First off, this is a time of truth. And I think I had a wonderful astrologist on my show, Susan Miller from New York City, back in April of 2014 on my show. And she said this was a time of truth and it'll extend for thousands of years. And one of the ways that things that are true will become self-evident as being true, and those that are false will be shown to be false and fall by the wayside. And there's no escaping it. And there's basically no way to escape God. And I think as time goes on, with the rising consciousness on this planet, that all of this will come to the forefront and people will no longer be able to hide it as they have in the past.
I think there's accuracy in that from what I've experienced. And I recognize the truth of those spiritual dimensions because I've performed several exorcisms, including right in St. Peter's Square. Mm-hmm. And I know the reality of this thing. And I do sense that its power is definitely wobbly right now, but it's kind of like the phenomenon when people come to church on Sunday and then go away feeling better. I don't think we can allow ourselves the luxury to think that something is being done for us. We have to make this change ourselves. If there's children that are going to be saved, it's up to us to do it. And right. Other help would be great, but we know that the way that things change is when people confront not just the individuals doing it, but what's backing them, what's paying them, what's supporting them, uncovering the whole industry and network of political, legal, big money backing for these crimes. That's the way it starts coming apart. And if it's happening now, what you're describing, it's because of that hard work on the ground that a lot of unnamed, unknown people have done at the risk of their life and everything. Right. And I've had friends killed for taking that stand. And the way I honor them is just to keep going and keep saying what I know is true. And mm-hmm. I think there's a lot we don't know, we don't see. And I still believe, like Martin Luther King said, that the moral arm of the universe bends towards justice, but it needs a lot of help from us too, you know?
Right, right. And I think genetically, every human on this planet has an internal, it's written into their DNA, almost like a justice code. And if they see something wrong that bothers them, they will speak out, irregardless of what. And I know you have, and I appreciate you so much for your wonderful work. We've got about 15 minutes left, Kevin. And are there topics you'd like to go over during the last part of this interview?
Well, first of all, I should mention to people that everything I'm saying has been really well documented. I've written 18 books now on it. You can find most of them on Amazon. Just put in my name, Kevin Annett. And these are not only the hard evidence of what I'm talking about and the history of what we've been doing, this whole movement that really started in Canada and now has gone all over the world, but also practical manuals for how to take action on these things, right? And what I do a lot these days is encourage people to take power back into their own communities. Like, the practical question is, yeah, it's good to find these things out, but I find that just giving people the information isn't enough. Right. People learn things, but then they don't know how to act on it, right?
Sure.
But we've shown them that you can act on it, you know? And so I give a lot of advice and work with people who are trying to organize on the ground. One of the ways we do that, we form common law courts by people. There's more of a tradition of that in America than in Canada, but the people can sit in judgment of rulers and others who are guilty of crimes. Mm-hmm. And we showed in Europe how that has an effect. It forced the resignation of Benedict and three other top people in the church, mm-hmm. who are all named in the indictment. Our verdicts from citizen tribunals can be acted on by other courts. They can issue arrest warrants against these people. So citizens have great power in their communities when they convene these inquiries, when they name the names, when they make the citizen arrests against, you know, known child rapists and things like that. But you need somebody to break the ice. And that's a lot of what we're trying to train people to do, how to take that step, be confident to take those steps. So sure. In terms of me and my work now, there's that, but I'm continually on call as well with survivors of these crimes. And, you know, just it's a continual kind of having to remind people of things, because how easily memory of what we've achieved and all these other things is erased. Mm-hmm. With the internet now, it's very effective to kind of bury memories and hard evidence of these crimes. So it's a continual struggle to keep this above water, right? And I would urge people to kind of check all that out. Go to murderbydecree.com. And write to me, thecommonland@gmail.com, because that's, you know, how we keep this work going, right?
I've heard persistent rumors that there are thousands and thousands of indictments related to sex trafficking, among other things, here in the United States, which have been served. I'm also getting reports of strange earthquakes across the country, earthquakes that don't happen in many places, appearing in beneath cities and rural areas. And some say that these are related to underground bunkers being blown up where a lot of children have been held captive as part of the sex trafficking. Have you heard about that, Kevin? And would share, welcome your opinion on that.
Well, yes, I've heard about it. And again, it's mostly innuendo and rumor. I haven't seen, from the people I know in the States, including on a few occasions when people have gone to check these things out, they haven't found any hard evidence about it. I don't doubt that things like that go on. And I would like to know, though, in order to do that, you'd have to have a lot of money or power behind you to even stage things like that. Right. And I'd like to know who's doing it. I mean, there's a lot of people who point to various figures who say they're behind it. They're really, you know, on our side and everything. I mean, again, some of this could be wishful thinking. People tend to defer to authority figures rather than thinking they can do anything themselves. So I'm really, I don't know. The question is, I don't know. It's like, you know, I'd be happy to believe that, but I don't, again, that's going back to the Sunday church thinking of, we just have to come here, we'll be reassured, and then we can live our the rest of the week reassured somehow.
Sure.
That's not my experience of how things change. And I guess I'd also ask, you know, when people, and the example of this is the, what they call the financial reset, which people believe is going to happen
sure.
for many years right. now.
Right.
You know, the question is like, why would the banks suddenly change their spots and want to help people? Right. I mean, that's not their nature to do
right.
that. So,
yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm from Missouri, right? Like, show me the evidence. Otherwise,
right.
I go on what I know. And so anyway, that's my short answer. Or maybe it was too long, I don't know.
No, it's fine. It's fine. What are you working on now, by the way?
I'm continually to write. I'm trying to, I'm branching off into other fields too. For example, I've written plays on this that I tried to get produced in Canada, and both times they were shut down. It was a play about medical experimentation on Native children, documented. And both times the people dropped away very quickly. I mean, that's what's really interesting about this. We did a documentary years ago called Unrepentant, which you can see on our website in that. And it kind of documents the whole story of how this came out. But I would very much and intend to work on a sequel, because that only went up to 2007, and so much has happened since then. But my story is a test case of how one person can have an amazing impact just by being stubborn and not backing down and by standing on hard evidence. And if you're in the right time in the right place, you can move mountains. And that's the miracles that I've seen that I've been able to do just by not giving up and saying, you know, I'm not going to be intimidated into silence or by fear or any of this, because children's lives are on the line. My own children's lives were on the line over this stuff. So I had to fight back. And that's what any parent who's genuine knows, right?
Right, right. You brought up China earlier. Is there child trafficking in China? Is it widespread in other countries too?
Enormous. It's especially in areas where there's a lot of poverty, when there's been natural disasters. A lot of the child relief agencies, they operate within them to grab children under the during situations of crisis. But like I say, the thing about China and what really concerns me about the China's takeover of our society is that there's no tradition in China of common law, of human rights, of democracy of any real sense. That whole Western tradition coming out of, you know, Greek philosophy and English common law and all that, it's absent. So if that's thinking, you know, it's the Confucian thinking of like the one master has the truth for everyone, whether it's Mao Zedong or the present regime or the emperors of China, and everyone is just has to go along or that's it. I mean, I think if China ever took over this country, this culture, we'd have a Tiananmen Square every day just to suppress the natural kind of liberty, desire for liberty in that Americans and others have. I think we're heading into very murky waters and very dangerous times. And we have to be aware that we've got to hold on to our traditions. And so, you know, it's not a matter of not liking Chinese people. It's not about the Chinese. It's about the nature of their system. And, you know, and we've seen the results of that again, and we got to hang on to what we know is ours, right?
Right, exactly. And I want everyone to know that today's a tremendous day spiritually and that our prayers do help the planet. It's called Lionsgate. It's 8/8/2020, as I mentioned before. And we are entering a beautiful new time on the planet. I know things may seem bleak, but they're not. And we are getting a lot of help from the angels and spiritual forces from behind us. And I know, Kevin, I want to give you a message, too, that you're being protected in your work. And all of the angels and the six U.S. presidents I speak with are all very, very proud of your work. And they want to thank you so much. We've got about 5 minutes left, and I want to give you the rest of the time, Kevin, to wrap up your wonderful interview today.
Well, thanks, Ted. I appreciate the time. And I think that just to leave some basic information for people, again, to remind you, murderbydecree.com, thecommonland@gmail.com is how you can reach me. Also, I should mention, I do a blog radio show every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific. And it's on the same BBS radio network that we're on. It's bbsradio.com/herewestand, one word, here we stand. And 3 p.m. Pacific on Sundays. And we have a lot of the people doing this frontline work on our show. All the shows are archived at that site. So I urge people to learn about this. And I'm continually, you know, kind of on the road giving talks, giving workshops on these things. So I urge people to contact me. And it's, you know, the power when people learn this, I say the next step is to act on it in your own community where you are.
Right.
And we've had a tremendous response in the wake of the whole COVID nonsense. Probably the number of volunteers that I get contacted by is increased tenfold. People want to act now. There's an amazing opening happening and determination to stop this tyranny. And in a way, I'm kind of grateful for the police state because it's woken a lot more people up, right?
Sure.
And made us realize that now is the time. As you say, now is the time to make this dream a reality. So
right.
I see that and I'm confident that it will happen.
Right. Wonderful. Kevin, could you give out your website again and how people can contact you?
Yes. Murderbydecree.com.
Okay.
And there's also a movement to establish a republic in Canada to break away from Crown authority. That's republicofcanada.ca. So Canada is K-N-A-K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofcanada.ca.
Okay.
And again, our site is bbsradio.com/whowestand.
Okay.
And my contact is thecommonland@gmail.com.
Okay.
Thank you, Ted.
Okay. Kevin, you're a wonderful fellow, and I'm so glad you could come on my show today. Thank you so much again, my friend.
Anytime, Ted. Thank you so much.
All right. Keep up your good work.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Bye-bye, Kevin. Thank you so much again. That was Kevin Annette from Canada. He does wonderful work in protecting children and human rights. He's been nominated twice for the Nobel Peace Prize. His website is murderbydecree.com. My next segment of the program is going to be on with Michiko Hayashi from the Emoto Peace Project. With many children at home nowadays, the Emoto Peace Project has these wonderful kits where they teach children how to show love and gratitude, and they do it through rice. And what they do is they'll take three jars of rice, and that one jar will be sent lots of love and gratitude, and you'll write love and gratitude on the bottle of rice. A second jar will be ignored, and the third jar, people are encouraged to send negative thoughts to. They may write, you know, hate or something on the jar. And after a number of a couple of weeks, usually the rice that sent lots of love and light will stay fresh. It'll stay fresh for months. It's amazing. The middle jar will start to deteriorate and maybe get moldy, but the jar that's very dark and the jar that's been sent negative thoughts always turns black and starts to disintegrate. And it's a fun exercise for children to show how our thoughts affect reality. And Michiko Hayashi will be talking about that on the on her segment of my next program. It's a pre-recorded program, but it's fun to watch. And if you're a parent at home and you've got children, and if you'd like to show them how your thoughts can affect reality, you can contact me or you can contact Michiko. My email is outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, and the kits are just $15 without the jars or $35 with the jars. And but before we go to that segment, before I forget, this is something that comes with my book, Messages from the Masters. It's the actual newspaper article that was published on November 22nd, 1963 in Christchurch, New Zealand, while President Kennedy was still alive. And what's amazing is that this headline, of course, says, Kennedy shot dead, gunned down during drive through Dallas. Well, I did some investigation, and the basis for this story comes from a press release from the U.S. Embassy in Auckland that was released on November 22nd, while President Kennedy was still very much alive in Washington, D.C. So people may say, well, how could this article appear while President Kennedy was still alive? Well, it appeared because Vice President Johnson ordered all the U.S. embassies around the world to release this story about Oswald killing Kennedy on November 22nd. 1963, because that's the day they planned to kill President Kennedy. And so the problem with New Zealand is that New Zealand is a day ahead of the United States, so that when they released this newspaper article on the 23rd of November, and here's the date here, President Kennedy was still very much alive in the United States. So it's an interesting article. If you'd like a copy, just send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I'd be happy to send you a copy. Now with that, I'd like to go ahead and Doug or Don, if you could please play this second video with Michiko Hayashi talking about these beautiful homeschool kits for children that teach them the power of love and gratitude. And then after that, I'll come in at the end of the hour to wrap things up.
Because